The topic of discussion is one of an overview of halacha with regard to the laws of Taras HaMishpacha, the laws of family purity. By way of introduction, I would like to share some thoughts which are as important to the performance of the mitzvah in terms of the halachic issues, which not only cover the technicalities of the law, which Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law, delineates and is very, very exacting in terms of how the mitzvah is to be performed, but also great care, concern, and sensitivity has to be applied in terms of how one's approach, sensitivities, and expressions are attended to during this particular time. We are talking about a very, very beautiful mitzvah, and one of the mitzvahs that is the foundation of Jewish life, and without question, the foundation of the Jewish family. The mitzvah of Taras HaMishpacha is the expression of the love and the intimacy between husband and wife. In Hebrew, the word love, ahava, comes from the word hav. Hav means to give. The concept of giving is never greater than in the expression and the manifestation of the relationship between a husband and a wife. This is where giving expresses itself in its most fundamental and important and essential relationship. You know, when a child is born, we say, "Kishem shenichnas labris ken yikonreitz l'torah l'chupa l'maisim tovim." If the child has entered this covenant, a bris milah, circumcision, ken yikone so tu shri enta l'torah l'chupa l'maisim tovim. It's interesting that it brings down maisim tovim, good deeds, only after it talks about chupa. Why does it talk about chupa and then talk about maisim tovim? Why are good deeds only mentioned after chupa? And the reason is because the area of the relationship between a husband and a wife, those sensitivities and requirements to establish a relationship, shalom bayis, is the foundation, is the training ground by which one from that experience is able to fully understand and to give to others. If there is shalom at home, then there's shalom in the world. If there is no shalom at home, then there will be no peace in the world. In fact, this same thought is brought down in Chazal with the idea of kibud av v'eim also, that if there will be kibud av v'eim, if there will have that relationship between parents, the sensitivity, the understanding, then it will be l'man yarichun yomecha, then you'll have long life, for there will be no war. The world will be at peace. But if there is no relationship at home, if the home is wanting, there is a breakdown between parents and children and parents, there's a breakdown between husband and wife, then there is a breakdown in the world order as well. The woman's mitzvah of Taras HaMishpacha is one of the three great mitzvahs that were given to women. We say it every Friday night. Three mitzvahs were given to women. Distinct mitzvahs, mitzvah of challah, hadlakas haneros, the lighting of candles, 18 minutes before shkia. It's been accepted, a custom in Israel, that's when women light. And the last one is taras hamishpacha. This concept of taras hamishpacha, as we will define, and as you might be familiar with many of the particulars, is a mitzvah that takes great care, meticulous observance, A woman must be very well versed in halacha in order to be able to observe it properly. But the mitzvah is not only accompanied with particulars and details in the performance of the mitzvah and the knowledge and the questions that arise, but there's a lot of mental and emotional energy invested in the shilas and the concern to bring this period of time to fruition until the time that she goes to mikveh. Just in the last, I would say, 3 or 4 days, I had numerous shilas, very difficult shilas in Taras HaMishpacha. They were very difficult, not only in the technical sense, but they were shilas that had to do, they were emotional shilas. Different situations and different people, different emotions that are attached to it. And therefore, one must understand that for a woman in particular, it's an enormously emotionally invested period of time, and one that requires us to be sensitive as men to the emotional and spiritual and halachic investment that women make in this performance of this mitzvah. And therefore, when a woman comes back from mikveh, it's a very, very special and important time to her. As I was going up to New York recently, a very prolific author of a very famous work about the difference of men and women. And he said that in order to maintain a good marriage, he counsels the women and the men, the couples, that they should get away at least once a month. Once a month they have to leave. There has to be something different. Go away from the children. We don't run away from the children once a month, though it's a good idea also. But not everybody has the yicholus, the opportunity. But we do have that rejuvenation. We do have that sense of renewal. And that is with the performance of the mitzvah of Taras HaMishpacha. It's a time that would be well served, that something should be done special. Maybe not every time. Nothing wrong to bring flowers. Nothing wrong to make sure that you're on time when you're home. To make sure that you are sensitive and that your wife understands that you appreciate the effort that was put in and that you're looking forward to the opportunity and the occasion. This will go a long way in solidifying the relationship, and I can't tell you that the responsiveness of men at this particular time is a great mitzvah in Shalom Bayis and will do great things in terms of strengthening the marriage. Women, by nature, are tsunuim. They have the midot tsnius of modesty. I think it starts from the pasuk, v'hu yimshol bach, that there Chazal tell us that it will be the nature of women that they will not be toveya, they will not ask. They will not take the initiative. And you see it in many areas of marriage. Women have expectations that men will understand. The men will understand. They test us. They test us to see, you know, test our love. That we should be aware. And then sometimes, many times, most of the times, we fall short. You should know that men and women are totally different beings. The only thing we have in common that we're the human species and that we're created B'Tselem Elokim in the image of God. That's where it ends. And there is very little after that. Totally different chunas hanefesh, totally different strengths, totally different insights and sensitivities, perceptions. Women have expectations, you know, that we will be alert, we'll say the right thing, we'll see when they're down, we'll see when they have need, but we don't see. Most of us don't see. It's a very rare person that is so attuned, whose radar is so alert. And I counsel and tell them, you know, should not be the measure of our love by the fact that sometimes we seem to be so oblivious. They are much more perceptive, much more astute, much more intuned. This is what Chazal called the Bina Yesera, the extra measure of wisdom inculcated within the women that we don't possess. However, nevertheless, in spite of our limitations, it is incumbent upon us to strive, to be able, you understand, to strengthen ourselves and to become more alert and aware. A woman does not ask for her needs. She will not demand. She is more tzniyistic. She is modest. And so it falls upon us a greater sense of responsibility to be able to pick up the pieces, to be able to be that much more alert and aware, and to make that transition and understanding and communication, yeah, that much simpler because of the knowledge and understanding that we should have of this tchunas haneshvesh, of this personality that they possess. The idea of taras hamishpacha, the laws of family purity, our conduct and behavior to the women and sensitivity to meet their needs, that from the time that they prepare to go to the mikveh, during that period that they're counting, our sensitivity that has to match, you understand, that effort on their part, the awareness that we have to their sneers, to their modesty, and to meet their requirements and needs, and their needs are different than us. Men have different intimate needs than women. We should be aware of that. Marriage is to give and to be able to understand what they need and to give to them. It's not what we need in a sexual relationship. They have different needs, and to be able to understand those differences and to meet them as they have to sometimes meet ours, to find a balance. But I want to tell you there's also another element, and one that doesn't relate to the sensitivity and awareness and to say the right thing when they come home from mikveh and during this period that they're permitted, but also there has to be given an equal measure of attention and wisdom and understanding during the time that they're not permitted. At a time when a husband and wife are not permitted to each other, it's a special time of communication. I heard a very beautiful word. You know, during the Sheva Brachas, Tezgila Rina Ditzav Echedva, the last one of the Sheva Brachas. Gila Rina Ditzav Echedva, languages of ecstasy and joy. Gila Rina Ditzav Echedva, Ava V'Achva, love. Achva means what? Brotherhood, you know, relationship. Shalom V'Reyos, peace and friendship. There are eight expressions. Gila Rina Ditzav Echedva, Ava V'Achva, Shalom V'Reyos. So I heard Gila Rina Ditzav Echedva, those languages of joy and ecstasy, are those four languages that are reserved for the time that a man and a woman are permitted to each other. Ava v'yachva v'shalom v'reyus is the measure of the relationship during those times that they're not permitted to each other. It's a time of bonding, it's a time of reyus, friendship, v'shalom, and peace. Ava v'yachva, time of love and coming together in what is one. It's a time to communicate. I've received many shilas during this period of time. What is the proper conduct and behavior? Shulchan Aruch will speak about it. It's a time that a woman has to dress with greater modesty, not as provocative, because it's a time that they're not permitted to each other. And so therefore there has to be a greater measure of tznius, not only in the way she dresses, by day and by night, but also in her speech. I received the shaila with somebody's anniversary. And it was during the times that they were not permitted to each other, and he wanted to buy her a bouquet of flowers. Is that permitted? Of course, I told him, 100%. Woe to you if you did not recognize your anniversary. The Shaila came up, I was asked, are you allowed to say I love you during this time that a husband and wife are not permitted to each other? I love you. I said, 100% you're allowed to say I love you. You're still married. I only love you half of the month, the other half I don't love you. Father. But it says you have to know, how do you say I love you? You don't start rolling your eyes, you know what I mean? It's a time that you have to use seichel, you know? The fifth Shulchan Aruch, the fifth code of Jewish law. Balance, balance, balance. That's what it needs. It needs synthesis, it needs to be able to draw lines and to know exactly, not to be too from and not to be too little from, to be able to find that Kav HaYosher, HaGesher Tzar Me'od, the bridge is very narrow, but it's there. It's a perfect balance. And so, just as we have to have sensitivity, we have to meet the needs of our wives during those times that she's permitted, in no less measure do we have to be sensitive. And maybe sometimes it's even more difficult, more demanding. It's a time made of maybe of greater difficulty, that we have to be sensitive and aware and to be able to speak to them appropriately and communicate to them effectively. It's a full-time job to be a good husband. And the more we will give, the more in turn they will be able to give us as well. I would like to share with you, does anybody have any questions? I'd like to go over some of the halachas as an overview about the laws of Taras HaMishpacha, taking it from the top, from the beginning. A woman is also prohibited to her husband from the time that she sees dam, that there's any presence of blood, and we will discuss what creates this isur, what are the circumstances under which seeing dam blood manifests itself in a state of prohibition. Number one, a woman who has a hargosha, has a feeling, you know, that there is a discharge that would create an isur, that would be a prohibition, that would be a time that she would be usher. Sometimes a woman can have a hargosha, a discharge, and it's not necessarily dam. It could be something else, and if it's found to be one of the colors, and we will talk about colors shortly, that do not prohibit her, then it's okay, then there's no question. But most hargoshas, if she has a hargosha, and she's aware and attuned of her body, and knows what those feelings are, then the halacha would be, surely if she found dam and it would be red, you understand, the color would be red, then of course that there would be usur, even if it wasn't her normal cycle and even if it wasn't the flow, any measure of dam, any discharge of blood that would come out that could not be attributed to a makah, to a wound, would make her prohibited. The second thing would be a kesem, a woman who would find, on her undergarments would find the kesem, a stain, would also be a isur, would be a prohibition. But that would, of course, be something that would be subject to halacha, would be white and uncolored undergarments, and a woman's aware of all these technicalities in halacha. The halacha, just to go over it quickly, is that a woman who sees a kesem, a stain, if it's on white, and women are not to wear white during the time that she's permitted to her husband, she shouldn't wear white. In such a situation, if there is no hargosha, if there's no discharge, she just finds it, and it's uncolored, there's nothing to worry about. The woman is not prohibited. The woman is permissible because it's only a rabbinical law. If there's no feeling and sensation, it's just a stain that a woman finds, then since it's only without a hargosha, without a sensation, it's only a stain, then the rabbis never decreed it that it would be prohibited on colored underwear, on colored garments. And so therefore, a woman during the time that she's permitted should take special care and attention to the fact that there is a that it's what he called it again, that it's that it should be colored. One of the questions that comes up in many times is the halacha about an examination. An examination when a woman goes to a doctor, those shaylas come up very often, and the technology and the methodology and the tests keep on changing. And the old, you know, principles, you know, have to be updated. But basically, you know, the halacha is that there are certain procedures that will make a woman a nida, will make her prohibited. Chazal tell us that there are certain invasive examinations using instruments detailed according to halacha by size and width that will create an opening here in the uterus, and that will create, without question, an issue, or it will be an issue of halacha with regard that we would assume that she's a nida. And so therefore, it will depend. For instance, a woman that has a D and C, she would be a nida. A woman that has a pap smear would have to ask a shayla, depending upon the type of examination it's done. If the examination is done, you know, by not by an instrument, by the doctor himself, you know, then it would not be an Isur. Then he would not make her heart, so she would not be prohibited. So there are different situations and different tests that are done that would have to have ask a shayla each one independently to be able to know what the status of the halacha is. One of the questions that comes up very often is a woman sometimes that sees dam, that sees blood, you know, in the urine or in, then that would be a problem, that would be a serious problem in halacha. And also women are cautioned not to make bedikas. Men should tell their wives not to make bedikas. You know, sometimes the women get nervous, you know. The halachas is so important to them, and many times, you know, it's a very big preoccupation. So when they have a question, don't know what to do, right away they make a bedika. They make a bedika, they make an internal examination, you know, with a cloth. And then if any shayla comes up over there in that situation, then it's very bad, because if you make an internal examination, then any measure of blood, no matter how minute it is, would be an isa, would be a prohibition. And so where a kesem, if one finds a stain on an undergarment, it would require that the measure of dam be the size of a penny. But when an internal examination is made, then the amount of blood that would make her prohibited would be nothing more than even a mustard seed, would be the smallest measure of dam, the smallest measure of blood of discoloration would make her prohibited. And so therefore she's cautioned that she does not make a bedika unless necessary, prescribed by halacha. And then you understand, however it works out, then that becomes, you know, the situation. However, the Erek Kesem, to review it again, a woman that finds a stain on her undergarment, that's only if it's the size of a penny, and it has to be attached, a penny attached in one area. If it's dot here, a dot here, a dot here, that all adds up to a penny, it will not prohibit her. However, any internal examination that she would make, a bedika, then any measure there would be prohibited. Let me mention something interesting. You know, colors. The colors, husbands sometimes have brought shyless questions. It's a very, very interesting, it's a science almost, to be able to tell the colors and to be able to know which are prohibited and which aren't. Let me just go over quickly with you. Red is not good. Okay? Brown, depends upon what kind of brown. Some browns are, some browns aren't. I remember that somebody, when I had the good fortune for many years to study with Rabbi Feinstein, we studied Maris. They came with a set of shyless questions every week from the yeshiva by us in Chofetz Chaim. Rabbi Shimon Ida brought his shyless from Lakewood. Rabbi Shmuel first brought his shyless from Chicago. Rabbi Bluth brought his shyless from the east side. And every single Thursday morning, All the shilas that came from four different institutions and locations were presented to Rabbi Feinstein for his psak. Over the period of, I would say, 4 years, we looked at over 1,000 shilas, 1,000 maris. And over that time, we got fairly good sense of what was prohibited, what wasn't prohibited. And these shilas that we received and that we observed, we understood were not something that could be given over just by a chart. Somebody wanted to bring in a Sherwin-Williams chart of all the different colors of brown, golds, there are different combinations of colors. When a woman has a discharge, it's not just a brown or a yellow. It's a lot of times it's gold. It's a combination of different colors. And all these different colors make so many different possibilities that it's almost impossible to be able to define them and to put them into a chart. Rabbi Feinstein was not happy with the chart idea and surely didn't go for it. It has to do with texture, it has to do with feel, it has to do with sight, it had to do with the intuition and the feeling and the experience, One time Rabbi Feinstein was brought a shiloh, It was red, and it was a funny red. So Rabbi Feinstein said to us, Ich weiß nicht, was das ist. He says, I don't know what it is, aber Blut ist es nicht. I don't know what it is, but it's not blood. Permitted it is. I don't know what it is, but I know it's not blood. That's it. His feeling, his sense, of seeing so many different shilas told him that this was something that was definitely, without question, permitted. So I would like to go over with you, red is not permitted. Brown depends upon what kind of a brown. Gold depends upon when you see gold. Gold generally is not so bad, but it has a highlight to it. Gold is a combination of brown and yellow. Depends upon when it is. I'll explain to you shortly. The other things I've seen green already. I saw orange already. Those are the main colors that you'll see. Reds, you'll see golds. You'll see browns, enormous amount of the spectrum of browns. And those are where the very, very difficult shilas present themselves. Let me mention that the criteria under which a husband and a wife should be aware that these shilas manifest themselves and give a rabbi great latitude in paskening the shilah. Number one, it depends upon if it's a hefsek tara. If the question is the first bedika, the first check that a woman makes, then that is the most severe, and the color there would depend, what color it is, and sometimes a color at the end of the seventh count, the 7 days, would be much more lenient than if it would be at the beginning of the 7 days. The next issue would be, besides just the color and the time on the spectrum when the count is, are there any children? If there are no children in the marriage yet, then the shaila is more mako, then the question is somewhat more lenient. Other areas that would be in the situation would be, how long has it been since the woman hasn't been able to go to mikveh? If it's been a very long flow and the woman hasn't been able to go for a very long time, then the shiloh becomes that much more imperative. And even Rabbi Feinstein told me even 1 day is a shas hachakod. To push off mikveh for 1 day is a very extenuating situation and circumstance. And taught us to be sensitive even to 1 day and to be able to approach the shiloh, with a sense of importance and gravity, that this itself, is a chelik, a portion of Shalom Bayis. And so therefore, the shilas, are very much subjective to the situation, the circumstance where the couple find themselves, not only their own personal relationship, but of course in relationship to the count, when it is, and a little bit more, we will go into that in detail as we move along. Okay. I wanted to share with you a little bit from the top again how we go ahead and we go over the count and how it manifests itself. A woman comes and she has, suspects that she is prohibited. She finds out that she's a nida, that the time has come. Right away she puts down on her calendar when it comes. When does the count begin of the 5 days? When is she a nida? It goes from sunset to sunrise and from sunrise to sunset. What does that mean? The day, according to the halacha, of these laws begins in the morning when it is sunrise. We can start davening by nates, by alos hashachar. We can start davening, 60 minutes before sunrise, we can start davening. But the laws of Taras HaMishpacha, the laws of when the woman saw, when she marks on her calendar, what day it was it day or night, depends upon what time during the day she saw. And that depends whether... So a woman will see today on Monday. She will see, let's say, Shkia, take, for example, let's say it was 5:45. And then she will see 2 minutes before 5:45, then this is day one. She's prohibited from the moment she sees it, providing it falls into the criteria that we said. She had argosha, she had a discharge, or there was an examination, or for whatever reason you understand that fell into that category. She then knows that day one began today, even if it was 1 minute before sunset. Today is one. She counts 5 days. She counts Monday is one, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is the fourth day, is the fifth day. After she counts 5 days, on Friday afternoon, before Shkia, before sunset, she makes a bedika, a check. And that is called the Hefsik Tara. Hefsik Tara means that is the Hefsik, the interruption, the period that will delineate between Tuma and Tara. It will be that period of time, that bedika, that check, that will set into motion the count toward going to the mikveh and making her permissible. It is called the Hefsik Tara. That's the language that's used, called the Hefsik Tara, Hefsik for short. And that is a bedika that is done. And I must tell you that I received numerous shilas. And I don't know if it's the place of the husband to say something, but it happens often that the woman will forget, or it might be on her mind, but the day is short. She's at work, she's involved with the children, and the Hefsik Tara is made after Shkia, after sunset. And I would say that I would get, during the year, maybe 10, 15 questions like that. Upwards of 15 questions, just from that particular time period. A Hefsik Tara that's made after Shkia. How much time does a woman have after Shkia to make a Hefsik Tara? She has 2 minutes. The most she has is 2 minutes. If she does not make the Hefsik before Shkia, then the halacha of the law is that she has lost that day, and then is required then to push it off to the next day. So if, in fact, Friday afternoon, which now would have been the end of the fifth day, she failed in doing that, then she would be required to do it on Shabbos before Shkia in order to fulfill that requirement. Okay? So here we have the Hefsik Tara that begins and sets into motion the Shiva Nikiyim, the 7 clean days. So we count 5 days. We then have the first day, which is the Shiva Nikiyim, which is the last, right before the end of the fifth day, Friday afternoon. And then the woman would do a moch. A moch would be, she would put inside, you hear an aid habedika, sometimes they could put a tampon in, they would put something in for a period of time, 40 minutes, whatever, that would stay during Bein Hashmashos, during the time of twilight, and then it would be taken out for examination to make sure that there was no staining, that everything is okay. And many times, it is good, and then once that has been done, then what we put into motion are the Shiva Nikiyim. Shiva Nikiyim is the 7 clean days. So Friday before Shkia, it was done properly. When should it be done? On a time that it, for example, in the summertime, it should be done before candle lighting time. Preferably to done before candle lighting time. If a woman in the summertime is accepts Shabbos early, So even though when she accepts early, Shabbos early, it's what, light yet? Might she think that she should be able or could do it after candle lighting because it's still light because she accepted Shabbos early? Nevertheless, a woman should, preferably, to go ahead and to make a bedikah before candle lighting, before she's mekabel Shabbos, and before they daven in the shul, before they say Mizmor Shir LeYom HaShabbos. So even though she has still light time, there's still light left, she should preferably do it before they daven Ma'ariv and Shul to get in the bedikah. Okay? You go now to Shiva Nikiyim, the seven clean days. The seven clean days that are required are 7 days, two bedikas a day a woman makes. She makes one in the morning, and she makes one late afternoon. She makes it twice a day. If there is, at any time during the Shiva Nikiyim, there is a question in halacha as to whether or not the bedikah is good, and it's brought before the rabbi, and he looks at the shayla and says it's not good, there's a requirement to begin the Shiva Nikiyim all over again. At any time that the shayla arises, during the 7 days of the count, if it is to be found that any one of those days are no good, then one is required to go back. A new hefsek tara has to be made, and so it's to be treated again like Friday afternoon, right before sunset. And therefore, sometimes it can happen under rare circumstances, but it happens. Even on the seventh day, I recently got a shayla. On the seventh day, I was hard-pressed. I tried to figure out all the different tricks. I couldn't get out of it. And it was prohibited, and therefore the count has to start all over. And if it was brought early enough during the end of the seventh day, not at night, but it was brought, you understand, before Shkia, before sunset, the woman can make a bedikah. If it was good, she has a hefsek tara. If the question first waited for the what? The evening, and then it was looked at, then tomorrow, the next day, the hefsek tara is made again, which again establishes the purity, which then again will permit to do what? To put into motion the Shiva Nikiyim, the seven clean days. Again, the requirement, two bedikas. Let's assume a woman forgot to make a bedikah, and happens many times. I get this shayla all the time. I forgot to make a bedikah. Let's say she forgot to make a bedikah on the second day, the third day, the fourth day, the fifth day. I don't mean all the days. Yeah? The sixth day, she forgot to make a bedikah. She got to make a bedikah morning and night. She couldn't. She forgot. I forgot. One thing is a rav. You have to be very sensitive to them. Don't say anything. Don't say, how could you forget? You know, that's my first impulse. How could you forget? I mean, you know, what are you doing? You know, that if you ever do that, that's the end of the shilas. They don't call you up again. Goodbye. So you have to say, you have to be very understanding. I've never lost it. I remember smashing down the phone afterwards, like, man, how could you do that? You know, it especially put me in such a difficult position, a terrible position. But nevertheless, you know, you never go ahead and say anything. Call up, ask the shayla, I forgot. It won't make a difference. I mean, of course, the halacha requires a bedikah twice a day, every day. But if she didn't do it in one of the interim days, any one of the days between 1 and 7, the halacha would be that the count can continue, and it does not in any way impede the count from continuing, even though no bedikah was made. What has come up many times, the seventh day, I don't know what it is. It's beyond my comprehension. On the seventh day, no bedikah is made. This is a terribly severe shayla. The most critical shayla is day 1 and day 7. 1 and 7 must be done. If you miss 7, most of the people say that it's no good. And you have to wait to what? You go ahead and you make a bedikah on the 8th day, and you go to the mikveh that night after the 8th day. very important that women should be cautioned and that husbands, I don't know, it's a little uncomfortable to tell a wife what she has to do, but that, you know, on the seventh day that the bedikah should be made. And only from experience that I've seen it, I would find at very firm women, it's not like women that are, you know, uncaring and not concerned about the halacha, and they ask Shaila. You know how hard it is for a woman to call up the Rav and say, I forgot to make a bedikah on the seventh day? Obviously, she's committed to halacha. And yet they forget. And so therefore, that is an issue of great concern. As Rabbanim, we are very much attuned, you know, to certain situations where women have difficulties in making bedikas. Sometimes women, you know, are irritated, or sometimes they have other problems, or it's difficult for them to go through this process. And sometimes a Rav, you know, knowing of a history that a woman has great difficulty, will permit sometimes that there should be only one bedikah made a day, and sometimes, if necessary, yeah, under extenuating circumstances, we will even counsel that bedikah should be skipped. And days, not every day, should be done. But that has to be done on a very individual basis and has to be proposed to a Rav, given the nature of the particular problem that the woman has, that we would make such an extension and we would permit her to have such a heter. So here we are, we're starting the thing again. She sees, she counts 5 days. At the end of 5 days, what does she do? She makes a what? A hefsek tara. She now makes the hefsek tara, she starts going into the mode of the count. She counts how many days after the hefsek tara? 7 days. Two bedikas every day. During that time, she changes over from colored undergarments to white. The sheets in your house should be white. When you see your sheets go white, you know what's happening. Okay? That's in order to pick up that if there's any staining or anything, that it should be observed and seen, and the fact that it's white, you know, conforms to the halacha, that it's a time of observation to see, in fact, that everything is clear, that there is no issuance of dam, there is no blood whatsoever. I received a shaila, and I won't go through the psak now, about a woman who had forgotten and who wore colored undergarments and in fact did see a kesem. What is the halacha? That's a very interesting halacha. Did everybody pick that up? Yeah, during this time one is required to wear white. What happens if she wore colored and then she saw a maradam, she saw a kesem, she saw a kesem means a stain. Does the rabbinical law that says that a kesem, a stain, on kolid, even apply during Shiv Nikim, the 7 days that she's supposed to check and see that there's no issuance of blood? A very interesting shaiva. I had that recently, such a shaiva. Okay. Please be aware also the difference between a bedikah and a kesem. Very important. Interesting. A bedikah is that a check that a woman makes, an internal examination. That's called a bedikah. Any spot that is colored, that's red, of those colors that are not permitted, no matter how minute and small it might be, as long as the Rav sees it, the halacha is, it is what? It is no good. Sometimes the husband will bring me a shaila, and he says to me, do you see? And I look at it and I don't see. And he keeps on telling me, don't you see? I said, forget it. I don't know what he's pushing me for. Yeah, look, I don't see. It's okay. It's all right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Sometimes, you know, a rabbi could be, you know, a little colorblind. That's a shaila. A rabbi has to know that he's able to see. You know, I don't go through a whole year, you know. Yeah, the rabbi could have to see, you know what I mean? But there must be, you know, he at first has to know he has the yicholis to see. And then, you know, after he's able to see, you know, and look, then the halacha would be, it's his determination whether or not, in fact, the woman is, if the halacha is, it's good or it's not good. When a person will call me up and say, I want you to bring me a mara, I don't look usually at night. The color of the mara, the color of the, on the garment, you hear, on the bedikah, on the cloth, is very subjective in terms of its definition by the light that it's seen by. At night, it's not as clear and it's not as effective. However, I did learn that the light by a fluorescent is much truer in terms of the real color than the light that would be seen by a regular bulb. The fluorescent is truer, and that light would show up better. I remember once bringing a shayla to Reb Tuvia Goldstein many, many, many years ago in Brooklyn, and he looked at the shayla by a fluorescent, and he said, come back in the morning. He says, I'm still not sure. And so when it is a close, you know, when it's a gold, or it's a light brown or something like that, it's not necessarily so difficult to see. But there are many, many shaylos that have to be looked at again a little bit. It's borderline. And you should know that the color is very subjective in terms of the light that's being used. And so the sunlight is very, very telling sometimes in defining a shayla. With regard to the shaylos also that we speak about, I just want to mention that I just recently had another shayla. A shayla, you know, about a kesem. Okay, I get a telephone call, and a woman said I had a kesem. What's a kesem? Again, a stain. What day is it if I ask you a kesem? What day is it? Is it during the first 5 days, or is it the 7 days? When would it be, the kesem? It would be during the what? The 7 days, the seven clean days. That's when she has a shayla. She wouldn't usually have a kesem, right? A stain on an undergarment is a shayla if it was during the days of purity. Why? Because it was during those days she's permitted to her husband. What color would she be wearing? She would have colored. And if she had colored, then no matter how big the kesem, she would be permitted. There would be nothing wrong. Everything would be all right. So she calls up on the telephone and she says, I have a kesem. Okay, so then what do I have to do? So first I say, well, I'll look at it. Then sometimes the woman says, oh, well, I prefer maybe we have a different resolution. You know, maybe we have a different etza. You know what I mean? So it depends on the shayla. You know, most women in the community are very understanding and they bring the shaylas and would know and go ahead. Sometimes they won't, you know, from another community, they'll bring it with a telephone number. Or I'm supposed to call, you know what I mean, some kind of, or email, you know what I mean, the answer, whatever it is. But be it as it may, woman calls, I have a kesem. I have to be an investigator. Because I've learned from experience, a woman calls and says, I have a kesem. What do I have to ask? I just can't go ahead and say kesem. I have to say, did you have a hargosha? Did you have a sensation with that kesem? The woman said, I felt a discharge, then it's no more subject to the laws of what? Of kesem? It is not anymore an issue how big this kesem is, which I will tell you is required to be the size of a what? Gris, which is a U.S. penny. But once there is a hargosha, there is a what? A sensation that a woman feels the flow, then the law is, regardless of how big that kesem is, that stain, she is prohibited if it's a color that's not good. So when I will call up, she'll say, Rabbi, I'll say that, how big is the color? How big is the size? She says, Rabbi, it's a dime. And I'll say to her, that's good. Did you have any feeling? At some rare time, there will be a feeling. And so those criteria fall away. So you have to know. What happens? What's the shayla? I have a stain. Then I go ahead and I ask her, tell me the color. She says, the color is such and such. I said, that's a difficult color. Now let me tell you an interesting halacha. A woman is believed, if I pask in the shayla last week, last month, 2 months, 3 months ago, this color, I said to her, is permitted. She calls me up and she says, Rabbi, I have another shayla. I'm keeping you in business. I said, good. I said, what's the color? She says, Rabbi, it's exactly the same color as the color last month that you told me was good. A woman is believed to say it's exactly the same color. If she says, I know the color, I've seen it, it's exactly the same color, then she doesn't have to ask the shayla. She doesn't have to show it to me. because she says, I've seen it, you said it's okay, this is the color. They are neman, they are believed to go ahead and say that they remember exactly this color and it's okay. But I must tell you that women are very zahir, are very, very careful with the halachas, and as a result of the great and meticulous care that they give to the halachas, you know what happens? They go ahead, and sometimes, you understand, they become a little too nervous, you know? And you know what I mean? They are a little bit more machmir, a little more stringent than they should be. And let me give you an example. Yeah? I get a telephone call, a woman has a keser. So I go ahead and I say, how big is it? She says, well, 2 inches down and about a half an inch across. All of the area has to be what in order for it to be no good? It's not just the total area of a what of a U.S. penny. It has to be what? A connected area of a U.S. penny. Then I say, is the area a U.S. penny? Take out a penny. Take out a penny and now superimpose those areas where the shaila is and put it to see if in fact it will fill up the whole U.S. penny. Like that? What does she say to me? She says, it's bigger than the U.S. penny. I'm not convinced. Because the way she said it was 2 inches this, with this, and this, I didn't feel that that was true. I wasn't sure. I just had a sense. It was a very difficult situation. You know, it was pretty far advanced in the count of 7 already. So what did I do? Interesting thing. I'll tell you a halacha that I saw and something in Eitzah that I did here. What I did was, I said, show it to your husband. Sometimes I have a feeling that sometimes the woman is very machmir. Let me, what does he say? He looked at it, you know. He's a one step removed, superimposed it, said it's less than a penny. Said smut, it's okay. I'm so much on him. She said it was 2 inches this, with this, and this. I didn't feel that that was true. I wasn't sure, I just had a sense. It was a very difficult situation. You know, it was pretty far advanced in the count of 7 already. So what did I do? Interesting thing. I'll tell you a halacha that I saw and something in Eitzah that I did here. What I did was, I said, show it to your husband. Sometimes I have a feeling that sometimes the woman is very machmir. Let me, what does he say? He looked at it, you know. He's a one step removed, superimposed it, said it's less than a penny. Said smut, it's okay. I'm so much on it. I was once by Rabbi Feinstein. Rabbi Feinstein measured it, and you know what he said? It's a suffix. I can't tell. It was so close, you know what I mean? Because you're superimposing. So he took the penny and took it at this area, this area, this area. You know what? You understand how you have to do it. You put the penny on the area, and then, you know, you have to see, you know, does it really, you know, does it meet? It was a suffix. And you know what Rabbi Feinstein told me? Suffix the Rabbanon Lakula. Since it's a suffix, it's a rabbinical law. Because this kesem is not with a what? A hargosha. Is not a what? With a what? Discharge. So it's a rabbinical issue. Literally issue. It's a rabbinical matter. And therefore, since it's rabbinical, we have a principle, suffix, the rabbana lakula, a rabbinical suffix, you go lakula. And told me, if you can't exactly tell, it's permissible. Terrific sign. It was one that I've used subsequently through the years. And so the shaylis, you understand, you have to be a private investigator. And you have to know the tune of the nature of the person that asked the shaila when the question is asked. And you have to be able, you know what I mean, to look to an eye more than anything to try to find ways and means to permit, you hear, the relationship and to be able to go ahead and find a way. And I tell you the truth, you know, if I have ever erred, you know, it has always been on the side of being lenient, never on the side of being stringent. And I always had the feeling that when I face my Creator, and He's going to tell me, but how come, you hear, you blew the psak, I'll always go ahead and say, but Rebbe, I say, Abish, that was Shalom Bayis, you know? And I always have that feeling that I'm much safer going up there and having errors, you hear, with an interest, you hear, to be lenient, you understand, for the purpose, you hear, of Shalom Bayis, rather than to be stringent, you understand, and to prohibit them and to err on the other side. So that's generally has been my approach to these shaylos, always trying to find the wherewithal to be able to be matir. Mitz Hashem, time is up. It's already 9:05. I will finish it up next week. And what I would like to speak about next week will be twofold, very important halachas. Ones that involve us with regard to the harchakos. The harchakos are those laws that are very much, of all the laws, these are the most applicable in terms of our own interaction with our wives, and that is those matters in terms of things of safeguards during this period of the time, from the time that she becomes a need until she goes to mikvah. What are those things that we are permitted to do and those things we're not permitted to do? Regarding areas of handing, little children, food, leftovers, sitting on the bed, not sitting on the bed, you know, all of these different shaylos. We will go over all of those halachas. There's some of the very beautiful halachas. Many times I receive a shayla, you know, where one mate is not well and needs help. What are the parameters of giving and extending this help? The help I'm talking about physically, being able to help them. A woman is ready to give birth. What do you do? Well, sometimes, you know, you just don't, you know, if she needs you, you know what I mean? You just, but then it makes a difference if it's the man that's not well or the woman is not well. These halakhas will show great differences between the men and the women in the halakhas regarding the matter. Also halakhas about sitting on benches or other things, you know, we'll talk about the need to have two beds, we'll talk about all of, and these are halachas that are very relevant to us. And also I would like to finish off the halachas, and we'll talk about those laws about setting the calendar, at least that, you know, you should at least have some familiarity. When it comes down the pike, there are certain days that a woman puts on the calendar that she will project into the future, the next month, when those days, yeah, is not permitted, you understand, and those are called the vestals, the vespenini, you know, vest hafloga, you know, vest hachodesh. We will talk about that, about knowing the calendar as well. We will review those halachas. And then after we finish, you know, any halachas or questions that you might have and want to discuss or talk about, after we complete our mitzvah, I'll try to leave over enough time to be able to go to those as well. Thank you.